Yeah, so you were trying to be organized about this shit, and you put in the notes quite literally a brief discussion about orc dicks. And I, me and my girlfriend have recently tried to get like a D&D campaign going at her shop with one of her employees that's a DM. And we've been running through people like, oh, I want to do D&D. And then they're like, oh, I can't do it. I'm an adult. And we finally got the right group. Yeah. We finally got the right group. And someone mentioned something about mage hand. And I was like, can you give a hand job as a mage just using mage hand? Because I played one game of Shadowrun.
Yeah, dude.
And I was a crusty mage. And that's all I used was mage hand because it's the funnest fucking thing ever. I think the world would be a better place if mage hand was a thing.
The real world. To make the rules lawyer point in the D&D world, technically mage hand is 5-pound telekinesis. So anything that would require 5 pounds of force, you can do it. I don't feel like an HJ needs more than
handy.
It's a real rough handy. You got to be like,
but
maybe tone it down some. Yeah, but then like. Then your group's going to learn about the spell Magic Mouth.
Oh, then it's a whole thing.
It's a whole nother. That's a tote. That's you charge more for that. That's all.
Hey, I mean, welcome to the Primitive podcast where we talk about mage hand jobs.
We talk about mage hand jobs and orc dicks. So for real, though, the outline did say orc dicks. I think the actual words I used, I'm just going to read off this. Do they just have really one dick? Do they have 12 dicks? Does it matter if they reproduce by budding? Because you know the thing about orcs is they're kind of a fungus. Like, does a fungus need a dick?
Is it aesthetic reasons that they would have? Do they have one?
Well,
do we know?
Who knows? I don't know. They were.
I've seen some things online that suggest they do, but I think those are just fan drawings.
I've seen those things online too, and let me tell you, top quality.
Things not to look up.
Things to look up.
Brandon, tell us why we're here and who we are.
Well, here's why we're here. This is a podcast called The Premonition of Paint. Premonition of Paint is a podcast about miniature painting put on by me, mecha genre, Joel from the Cutting Mat podcast.
Hi.
The two of us are. And also, Phil Build Stuff, a fellow miniature painter who we talk about dicks. I mean, we talk about dicks in front of Phil because we like to see his response and then record it. It's great.
Yeah, we kidnapped him. It was great.
You and kidnapped
Phil. We're forcing him to talk about orc dicks.
Yeah, well, that comes up. You know.
Yeah, Phil, any thoughts on orc dicks?
Any that I have, I'll take to my grave. So it's not that big of a deal.
Yeah, honestly, that's the correct. You could run for public office with that opinion. I'm just saying that's. Yeah, that's the
perfect that's his point. Campaign slogan. Phil Build Stuff 2020. I'm taking my thoughts and orc dicks to the grave.
You like orc dicks? Well, you'll never know what I think about them. That's a secret.
That's a policy I'm not going to talk about.
I swear.
I'm firm on it.
God. Yeah,
that's
you know.
I get for growing up pre-internet, man. It's like the whole the sexualization of the little dudes, it just never really happened.
Sexualization of the orc
with
dicks.
Me. Yeah.
That's a weird world we live in.
Yeah, it is.
But that's actually, that could be a future topic as well.
just straight up orc dicks?
Back to this one.
All right, yes, orc dicks. But for real, there is a serious problem with the depiction of females in miniature sculpting.
Agreed.
Or lack of there?
Well, there's a lack thereof.
It's weird.
I think it has to do with demographics a lot. It has to do with the sculptors. And also, I think that they're... it's hard to find a good actual female miniature that looks like a human, and I hate that. Yeah. I fucking hate that.
And some sculptors are definitely better at it than others. Is Werner Klotz still sculpting? Because that dude made really nice girls.
I'm pretty sure he is. But I don't think he's making greens anymore. He's most of those sculptors. I know that. Well, Garrity went digital. I think that. Clock also went digital, but I haven't actually seen any of his new virtual greens. Regardless, I remember the day when Reaper Mini, the preview gallery on Reaper, went from actual greens, like photos of greens,
to renders.
Digital renderings. Oh, it was so weird.
Yeah, it was.
What is happening with the world? Ugh.
I mean, it's still luckily, happening man. Now. Like a lot of the, just like he was, like I was asking, you know, we don't know who's actually like working in physical media anymore. And not that it really matters. Some people are able to do just as well with digital as they were with the, you know, physical sculpting. Some people do different and better stuff in some cases. So it is what it is.
Yeah. I mean, it is what it is, but it's a case where you have to kind of ask which is better. And there's no answer, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is better? Like, which is a higher level at this point? Like, which do you consider to be a you know, superior product? If I were to start, you know, for example, a miniature sculpting cult, which I've thought about a lot.
Okay. All right. I'm on board already.
Who hasn't thought about that at some point, really?
See? I'm glad we're all on the same page. Here's how it works. Initiates sculpt a mini out of Play-Doh. Right? Play-Doh just kind of dries in the air. That's easy.
God. All right.
They don't last very long, but they're
doing
the initiatives.
This to hurt their feelings.
Yeah. It could be worse. You could ask them to chop off their genitalia. We've seen that. How that
that's
went,
that's so. Level 8, actually. We're not there yet. Shit. Spoiler alert. Jeez.
Keep jumping ahead.
Yeah, that's right after the trust exercises.
The trust exercises. You have to fall backward, and there's nobody there. So good
luck.
It ramps level
up
three.
Pretty quickly.
Level 3 is you fall backward, there's nobody there. Trust exercises. So even sculpting in green stuff, which I will affectionately call basically accurately plumber's putty.
Plumber's putty, okay.
Was never easy. That's a very sticky medium. It's not like clay. It's not like, you know, these other like plasticine kind of media. But it's what people used for a very long time. It kind of became a tradition. So like if you're at the top level of sculptors, you're going to use plumber's putty, you know, Nidatite was what they the commercial name.
Yeah. Nidatite was a big one. GW rebranded it as green stuff and sold it everywhere. But I mean, it's funny, like even when I was learning the basics of sculpting, like, and this was like, you know, late 90s, early 2000s. I was aware that most of the sculptors that I was really interested in weren't really using green stuff all the time. Some do, and some still do, and some are able to make amazing stuff out of it. But most of them were using, you know, like brown stuff, gray stuff. Like that's why I switched to Procreate.
But Procreate is really good. I think that epoxy sculpt is one of the greatest miniature sculpting materials available.
I see. I can't do it.
You can't do it up. I don't know how to pronounce it. It's epoxy, A-P-O-X-I-E.
Epoxy
sculpt. Yeah,
I can use it for like bulk filler, but I can't sculpt details out of it. It's just not the right consistency.
It reminds me so much of Nidatite, and I can't get Nidatite anymore because the price has skyrocketed. The Games Workshop stuff is a little bit different. So like Nidatite was yellow and blue, and the Games Workshop stuff was light green and blue.
Okay.
Did you ever use both? Because they were
I got one ribbon of GW green stuff once and never wanted to do it again because they didn't like separate the epoxies. So they'd like harden down the middle.
Yeah. You have to cut off the middle part. It's like you have to throw away that line of stuff.
Yeah. And the ribbon was like $10 and like just a complete gouge.
No, for real.
I used to just get Nidatite in tubes.
But the thing is like, if you're like a professional sculptor, it doesn't matter. If you're at the highest levels of this hobby, who cares what you're using? They could sculpt something out of like dirt and make a fantastic product.
Medium is not
dirt orc.
It's a dirt orc. Medium doesn't matter at all.
That's the thing.
I only suggest different media for different people if they're having trouble getting results they want out of what they're using. And if I get them to act, that's the hard part, is getting somebody to tell you like what they don't like about what they're using. If you can identify the properties, then it's a lot easier to categorize and sort out, you know, what your issue is and how you might assess that and move on to the next. So
but you have to reach a certain level to be able to identify the properties that you want from your sculpting media.
Yep.
That is tricky. If you haven't figured it out by now, today's episode of Premonition of Paint is going to talk about skill level. Stay tuned after the music. So here's the thing, like, how do you define skill level? This is I think that a lot of people in a lot of different communities have tried to like set limits on their contests. There's beginner, intermediate, advanced, or expert, or what have you. That's like the simplest way to define skill level.
Yeah, it's pretty subjective, pretty blanket terms. It's goes in one thing and the other.
That kind of benefits. That benefits certain groups of people to the exclusion of others, honestly.
Yeah, but I think so too. I think the biggest problem there is the advanced category.
Yeah. And
God.
Yeah.
Oh man, trying to define that's a thing that I mean, we just had it literally before we recorded. I set up the Hangar 18 contest for a Gunpla build off, and every time we do an online contest or in-person contest, even for NCGMC, the planning for that, when you get into what qualifies for advanced or intermediate or whatever you call it, mm-hmm. or want to call it, whatever fancy name you want to put on it.
Mild, medium, spicy, Joel.
Yeah, it gets mild, very medium. Subjective.
And pineapple.
Yeah, but the biggest thing Mango. With that is that it does help define kind of like the higher quality. And what's nice and what I've been learning a lot from you guys is that there is a lot of contests that are pretty much, at least in the miniature world, they are like the cream of the crop. They are the highest caliper they are because of how they got there. And I don't think it's something where they just put blanket terms on advanced, intermediate.
No.
It's just, from my understanding, it's a sole contest by itself.
It's a contest with a category. It's like when you enter the Golden Demon, you enter the Golden Demon.
That's not entirely true. They do break it down by categories of entries. Like there's like a kid category. And then there's, you know, squad, single model, you know.
Right. And
character,
diorama.
Monster, diorama, right. Whatever.
Yeah.
But it's like the 14-year-olds can compete against each other, and then everybody else brings their A game and sees what happens. But honestly, some of the times those kids kill it.
Yeah, they do. Oh, they do. But besides like youth, there's no beginner category.
No, there's not.
When you enter the Golden Demon and you come to play.
Yeah, you're up against the world.
Literally, world's top painters.
So there's no like weathering category Wars.
No. I mean, in the case of the Golden Demon, most of the models that you see in there are going to be 28 millimeter. And I say most only because it's not a hard and fast rule, but.
So there's no size requirement or like,
a skill category.
That's the thing. Golden Demon's different. And it's not, in my opinion, Golden Demon isn't like the gold standard of miniature, like Golden Demon
like, standard.
Might as well be. I'm not even going to say that. It's closer to say like a GBWC than, you know, any other miniature painting competition. Like
Workshop.
It is, and
That's right.
You can only enter GW stuff. You know, the new shiny does have a certain advantage in terms of what catches people's eye. Not so much as it does in some other stuff that we're used to, but. Whatever, like it is still a company sponsored event. If you want to see like the best of the best of the best, the world's best compete at Crystal Brush at Epicon.
Oh yeah,
and
that's what I've heard.
Crystal Brush will make you want to put down your paintbrush and never paint again.
Like, here's your motivation.
It's insane.
Crystal Brush, and this has been the case for a few years. $10,000.
It's
a $10,000
10K
first prize.
10 grand.
Yeah, first place. Yep. It's 10 grand. It's 10 grand.
Holy fuck.
You got to remember, these are literally people from all over. I mean, fuck, it costs half that much to go to Adepticon now. But
I was going to say it's that.
And then on top of that, you know, like the guys that win are from like Russia and Poland and shit. Like, you know, like people come from all over the world to compete at that.
It's literally an international contest and not in the way that you have to win your country and then you have to win the international contest. It's the case where everything is judged all at once. And the people who win the Crystal Brush are like literal classical artists, classically trained in oil paintings.
Sometimes
in museums, in some cases, right?
I mean, it could be. And in some cases, some of them are just really avid hobbyists that, you know, managed to push past that level.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
There's nothing like that for Gunpla at all. No. Period. Hands down.
No.
Nothing.
No. I mean,
I don't care what you say about any other state, because there's nothing to where people are flying in from fucking Russia and shit to enter in their scale model. Holy, I didn't realize it was 10 fucking grand.
Yeah,
10 grand.
I mean,
purse.
That.
Yep.
We've talked about this on the cutting mat to where like there's a difference between motivation between just improving your craft and then like financial means of winning a prize and stuff. But I think 10 grand really sets the barometer pretty fucking high in terms of pushing yourself to do good.
You should have you looked at the stuff that wins that competition?
Yeah, it's
it'll make your head spin.
It's pieces of art. It's literal.
It's wild.
Yeah, that's stuff that I can see people paying literal tens of thousands or thousands of dollars to buy one of those painted miniatures.
And they
even
do.
Even if you didn't buy them, they belong, to borrow a line from Indiana Jones, they belong in a museum. These are museum quality pieces. These things use so many different techniques.
I encourage anybody to look up all of that stuff. Like it's really
agreed.
Like, yes, first off, it'll make you feel like you have no ability whatsoever. Second off, it will also kick you squarely in the ass.
See,
like,
I've got a different opinion on that.
Agree with making it feel like you have no skill ability. It's the difference of knowing, okay, that's someone who won Crystal Brush, and I'm someone that is looking at that as inspiration.
Yeah,
I'm someone whose car doesn't have air conditioning, and this person won the Crystal Brush. Like this is a totally different category.
Yeah, for sure.
We got to put these things into perspective because
I
have that same.
It doesn't
feeling.
Have to be.
You're right. Yeah, it doesn't. It never has to be. And I recommend that we try to make it not that. And today we're talking about skill levels, and we're trying to set this up for potentially a multi-episode series about skill levels. Because
I think it might be two or three.
Yeah, probably two or three. It may end up being four, maybe five, and 20, maybe the rest. Maybe 10, who knows? I'm just thinking like this 100 episode series will cover skill levels. But the trick with contests, right? When you look at a contested tree, Phil is right. There is an immediate feeling that holy shit, I'm not good enough because this person can do this thing better than I can. But you've got to also consider that your situation is potentially different than theirs. The amount of time that you spend practicing may be different than theirs. Your natural talent, everybody has their own natural skills that sometimes you have to overcome to achieve. You know, for example, I've got shaky hands in some cases. I've got to overcome that naturally, that weird natural biological function to achieve the highest level. And I think I can do it. I believe that I can do that.
Oh yeah,
because I'm gonna practice.
I've met people with like severely crippling physical disorders that are phenomenal artists in whatever medium that they finally gravitate toward.
Yep.
But
and it's effectively like if none of these things matter, skill level is purely a measure of how well a person has mastered the art. And I just use the word art, and that is not definable.
It's subjective. I mean, all this shit, it's all subjective. I mean,
it is. And at the end of the day, none of it matters. You know, like who cares if you're, you know, level whatever, which I still don't think exists. Oh, yeah. But that's the hard part. You know, it's like, and that's why I get so annoyed. I shouldn't say that. It's why I've had a hard time adjusting to the way the Gunpla world seems to organize itself into looking at things.
Oh, like, yeah.
I'm not a competitive person. I'm just not. Like, I'm like a community. Oh, God, not even a community. That's a bad word now. I'm not a...
You're just a dude, Phil. You're just a dude. Maybe I think you're a co-leader. Who knows? We don't know what you do in your free time.
I think people accomplish a lot more cooperatively than they do competitively. I've seen that, and that's totally how I look at it. But then on top of that, it's like, competition can be fun, and it's fun to go do those things or whatever. But the way that the Gunpla world is set up, like it was kind of like you were talking about earlier when you were looking at the Crystal Brush things. You're like, oh my God, that's a thing I can't do, right?
You can't do
that's
it right
not
now.
The way. Mm-hmm. Gunpla is organized. like advanced means you do thing or you did thing X and Y and Z on this model. Ah. That's advanced.
It so does, here's like, the thing.
I can do lots of things you can't do.
Well, sure. And we just talked about the highest levels of miniature painting. We mentioned briefly that there isn't really an equivalent for Gunpla. Like Gunpla has, I guess, IPMS. There's a North American national, and there are IPMS chapters in different countries as well, who all compete together, and they have a mecha category. There are mecha contests in different countries, but there's no cohesive, like Crystal Brush is known throughout the world to be the best of the best. Like Joel said, there's no equivalent for Gunpla yet.
I think the big thing with that is that Warhammer miniature has been around for a lot longer.
It has. And it's got
not saying that scale modeling has not been around for a lot longer, but in terms of sci-fi scale modeling, it has nowhere near the age to it that miniature painting does. Mm-hmm. And the thing that we're seeing right now is there's a lot of contests coming up that, you know, at first it was all Gundam based. Hey, we're hosting this XYZ build off. No one's come out and said, hey, this is the top dog thing for you to win. Right. Unfortunately, this has been enforced by the company, just like Golden Demon is to Games Workshop, GBWC is to Bandai. And until there is a Crystal Gundam that comes out, you know,
Crystal Gundam,
there won't be that top tier. But what a lot of things that I see as someone that is an IPMS judge, I see a lot of Gundam builders that are trying, because like we said, some of these contests can be very intimidating, and it's not a lot of things that people look up to in terms of like, oh, fuck, I want to do that. I want to enter XYZ contests and win and be the next, mm-hmm. you know, whatever. A lot of those people that have that mentality that are pushed by competitiveness, they usually kind of enter in with Gundam and then they go to something else. They go to miniatures, they go to cars, they go to whatever actually has that competitive feel that to them winning actually means something.
Yep. Right.
And that's where it's so hard to, again, while Crystal Bush to us or even to me might be seen like, fuck, that's the top tier of the tier, mm-hmm. to someone that's maybe won Crystal Bush, like, no, it's not. It's this XYZ rando contest that I enter, like some fucking chicken fighting shit in a bar in South Russia or some shit. That's a top tier of the tier. But again, because, you know, to someone winning 10K or winning a trip to Japan is much better than just winning a coin or a statue or whatever the fuck contest is. But in terms of the Gunpla modeling world, it seems like right now, like IPMS is starting to get to that level. I've seen a lot of people and I've met a lot of people where they're solely there to compete. And that's what drives mm-hmm. them. And that's what makes their hobby fun because they are competitive people.
Yeah.
And we're starting to see states like SCGMC is I mean, California is huge. So it's a Southern California Gundam Model Contest. They are kind of like their states, like top of top. You don't win any crazy cash prizes, but you do kind of, it's a good sense of community. So again, it's one of these weird things where miniature painting seems a generation or two ahead of Gunpla, and hopefully,
I mean, literally
kind of,
yeah,
quite literally. I mean, in a timeline it is, but in terms of just, you know, contest and trying to build that competitiveness, I think it needs to look to other mediums like miniature painting or anything along those lines to say, okay, what can we borrow from this to maybe try and define that top tier quality that will raise the initial starting point and define an end point in a sense.
It'll be the thing that Gunpla people seem more terrified of than anything else in the world. They're going to have to embrace creativity.
Yeah, exactly. Well, here's embracing creativity.
I mean, this is the thing, though. It's I think this will be like the next episode, but creativity, like the word means nothing. The more I think about it, creativity has no real objective meaning. It's entirely a subjective concept.
That's true.
Yeah. People wield it like a fucking mace. Like with the term creativity, you've got to be real careful with the way that you apply that to different hobbies. Like even within the same hobby, like within Gunpla, how do you call something more creative than something else? Like how do you say that build.
How do you put a skill level on it? Yeah. I mean, that's like, remember the fucking commercials? Skill.
That's exactly.
Remember the Gundam Wing commercials? They're like, level 3, 5 hours. And it's like this like fucking Gundam that's like falling apart in their hands or some shit.
Level 3, level 5, real great Zeta. And it's like, oh, it's just the pieces on the floor, man. It fell apart. Like what? It's a real great Zeta. It just falls apart. It's sorry. Like, but then like miniature painting, it's like level 1, and it's appreciated. It's highlighted. Like level 1 in miniatures is highlighted. Let's consider what this means. Like that's a big deal. In Gunpla, maybe your lowest level means you snap it together. You know?
Yeah.
I think it's, you got to consider the difference between the two hobbies whenever you decide, well, okay, you know, I'm at this skill level and I need to be at this skill level. Because ultimately, if you listen to our most recent Cutting Mat podcast episode about the Smarft system.
It's a fucking mouthful, man.
I've got a t-shirt, man. Smarft.
It's it's more fun to write than to say. Yeah.
Oh, God. Sorry. I just smarfed. If the episode before that one was all about understanding where you are so that you know how to improve, you got to understand your skill level so that you can get better within the same hobby. So,
self-reflection like, and
we just talked for a long time about how this is like not a real thing, but I think it's important despite being a fake thing, you know?
It's I need to kind of recant a little bit here. Not so much that as I need to clarify a couple things. First off, what I said, the Golden Demon is roughly equivalent to GBWC. That's not entirely true.
It's not. It's really not.
It is very much like that company's sponsored competition or whatever, but a Slayer Sword winner will absolutely smoke you at anything you can do. Oh,
so, BT Dubs, Joel, it's literally a sword. Have you seen the pictures? Because it's...
Yeah, no, I've seen the photos.
Oh, I love it.
And I think that's where... We've kind of talked about, I don't know if it's part of the episode yet, but where it's the company setting their bars at two different levels.
That's
of
true.
What
the expected ability
out of the box.
Yeah.
That's right.
And then on top of that, when I say it's not real, what I mean to say there is that obviously some people are more skilled than others. That's how it works. I don't agree with the whole like advanced intermediate beginner level Gunpla modeling, because it's like, yeah, but that beginner does stuff that the advanced guy can't, and that's what makes miniature painting different from Gunpla, is that miniature painting is about stunting on fools. It's completely like you either can do the things or you can't do the things. If you can do more things, you're better.
it's about stunting on fools. That is correct. So
I think a lot of it, real quick, has to do again where the bar is set, but I feel with miniature stuff, everyone's set at the same base level. You get a gray or sometimes white or single color miniature, and it's like, okay, go from there. With Gundam, he's like, okay, this thing has limited articulation, this thing has color injection already on it, this thing is big, this thing is small. Like, it's so wide degree to where like that bar is just fucking weird chart that doesn't make any fucking sense. So we can't really put like a color coding system or a flavor type or anything like that to
system.
It. A flavor system of like, you know, mild, medium, or spicy. Which one is it going to be? It's because it's like, we don't fucking know. We're sold. Yeah. It's this weird degree of that. Yeah, for sure.
You mentioned like color coding systems, and I think like you might be referring to like belt systems in like martial arts. That's
kind
of the best analog that I'm aware of. Right. It's super defined. You master certain techniques and you get the next belt. It's very technique based and there are clear requirements for advancement. Karate, for example, 6 belt colors. Super simple, right? 6 belt colors.
Seems pretty,
within the belt
pretty
colors.
Slick.
Yeah. Some of the belt colors have multiple, you know, gradations between them. For example, like there are like 2 different types of blue belt, 2 different types of green belt, maybe 4 types of brown belt. There are 10 levels of black belt.
Good God.
Yeah.
I had no idea about that.
When you hit black belt in karate, you ain't done. Yeah. You're at your first degree of black belt. You've got 10 levels of advanced techniques to earn once you've hit the highest level. And I think that's a symbol that we can all kind of like absorb.
Yeah.
when you think you're a master. Concept.
Yeah.
Right. I think that's really important. That's a technique-based learning system.
It
you
is. Know?
Like you can divide people up based on what they're able to do. But like you said, the intro, the you know, beginner that can do non-metallic painting in miniatures is sort of kind of an outlier, you know?
It is.
That's an advanced technique.
Yep. I have, yeah. We talked about that friend of mine that I was showing some of the basics to and just shot off like a rocket. It's insane. But that's kind of the thing that blows that whole analogy out of the water, though, is that, you know, yeah, you can get to black belt and then, you know, you can do a Shogun bicycle kick, whatever, you know. Yeah, I'm fucking up here.
You could do a reversed hamstring half calf with two fried eggs and a mocha latte, and then
there
you,
we go.
Sunny side you up. Get the
sounds
yeah,
like the a skateboard move.
Yeah, we're getting to it. There's yeah. a fakie in here somewhere, but the
if it's a 50-50. It's a
the thing is that levels.
Tony Hawk, please contact us.
Levels. Oh shit! Is that Tony Hawk?
Is that you, Tony Hawk?
The levels don't really apply here because somebody's gonna learn different abilities that, you know, were previously assumed to belong to category X as soon as you define it. You know, it's like they might not be able to do stuff that I would consider basic, but they can do stuff that I have incredible difficulty doing. So are they more advanced than me? Are they?
Their brain works differently, you know?
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. No, like, especially in an artistic field, it's mm-hmm. real hard to do things solely on, you know, the merits of technique X. You know what I mean?
It's not linear.
This technique doesn't matter.
I've got an idea about this. I think that technique is, I consider it to be the foundation of the house. And I think technique is absolutely critical. But you're right. I mean, technique should not be the means on which you build someone's skill level, because techniques are kind of linear. Like, yeah, we just gave an example of how techniques are not linear. But effectively, like, you could rank techniques fairly reliably in a way that most people would agree in terms of difficulty level. But technique is not the hobby. The hobby is about how you apply the techniques to create a final product.
Your end result. I think as like someone that does a lot of judging, to me, I don't look for techniques. We don't get to see those techniques when it comes to just finally looking at your model. And the same thing online is you post a picture of your painted miniature or whatever. No one's putting your techniques into play. At least when I look at it, I go, cool. Whatever you did to get the end result, just keep fucking doing it because it works. And that's the same thing as while with miniatures, a lot of the technique is paint application based, not so much of articulation or can it do this or can it do that? Because again, at the end of the day, you're doing a sci-fi modeling contest, mm-hmm. I can't move your model and I don't care how it moves because it's a static object. And that's, again, where that lying of can we put a definition or a concrete term for skills is really wish-washy between the two mediums.
Right.
That's true. And that is a thing that in, you know, I know I give the Gunpla world a lot of flack compared to my native stomping grounds
you
or whatever.
You do.
I can't help it. It's disdain. But the thing is that there are things about Gunpla that make it special, that make it unique. Exactly what you're talking about. Like, aww. The fact that some people really focus on, you know, making a build that can retain posability, that can be changed, you know, like a big part of miniature painting is the presentation and composition of the piece. And if at the end of the day, your model is variable, mm-hmm. that's something that needs to be considered. And it, you know, the merits and flaws that go into a build that incorporate a model built like that need to be considered in order for it to be judged fairly against others.
Yeah.
But
I think you're right.
Love to see a contest, and this is me just kind of fucking going in my own brain here. I would love to see a Gundam contest.
No, get out of there.
Yeah, no. Dark space, dark space.
Oh, no.
Abort,
I would love
eject,
to see a Gundam
eject.
Contest where it's like a robotics club or a rocket club or something like that, where judging is not me and two other older dudes from IPMS and me trying to explain to them what an anime is. It's not us looking at your model kit when you're off getting hot dogs. It's you standing in front of a panel of 10 people saying, here's what I built, here's what I did, and here's what it does. Because that's the other thing is in a medium that is so hellbent on how it fucking moves and gimmicks articulation and LEDs and all this other shit that's not in miniatures, that has no fucking... there's no law of it in miniatures. The only thing I've seen is like, oh cool, I can put a magnet in to swap out weapons for gameplay. That's
well,
it.
yeah.
I would love to see a show and tell contest that's like, hey, here's what it can do, you know. But again, shit like that is that the top tier, or is that just a different avenue of where, okay, you may not be the greatest painter, but you can make your fucking Gundam transform into a plane but with a press of a button.
Yeah,
it's a different skill set. But it's something where that'd be dope.
To be fair, I have seen, you know, miniature builds where, you know, somebody put a, you know, baby cold diode in Gandalf's staff or fucking, you know, whatever. Like, that shit does happen in the mini world.
Oh, yeah.
The thing is that there's so much focus on painting and skillful manipulation of paint and especially the focus of the way that you create artificial light on your model, because that's like a fundamental aspect of the art, is that nobody gives a shit that you fucking...
That's an afterthought in Gundam.
Yeah, nobody gives a shit that you drilled a hole in your model and put a light in it. Like,
exactly.
They're like, okay, but can you paint it so that it looks like that light was there?
Why
that's
do you do
it
without
hard.
The LED? Right. Why do you need the light? You could just use some of the techniques that you've already learned to establish the idea of light.
Now let's see if you're actually good at this.
Like, we can build this up, and I think this applies for both gunplay and miniature modeling, because Joel mentioned posability, which is like in certain gunpla metas, that is an expectation, retaining posability.
It's true. And I don't understand that, but I respect it.
Let me try to illuminate that for you, Phil. If I retain posability on my gunpla kits, I can take pictures of them in multiple poses. Photography is much more interesting. So as I repose the thing, I can get like a huge album of a bunch of like cool looking, hey, you know, you get the feeling that this is kind of like a real robot. And that's what I love about gunpla compared to miniature painting. With minis, I can take a picture of a mini from multiple angles, but with gunpla, I can take a picture of a model and doing all kinds of crazy stuff, you know?
Yeah,
but that's true. And might be my, oops, sorry, go ahead.
Well, I think it all goes into the composition, you know, composition, which is the application of techniques to achieve a, you know, a cohesive goal. Like, maybe we're building up an onion from the core. Like, if the core of the skill onion is technique, we can add a layer and say, well, that layer is the application of technique to achieve, you know, some goal. And the goal, the composition goal, differs between hobbies.
Yeah.
Eh? What do you think?
I think that's also my dumb brain going into this, because I got dumb brain. But, like, with miniatures, there's a heavier... push and learning, and I mean just overall just like content, people wanting to learn how to do like dioramas, flocking, basing, trying to make the world around the static miniature more appealing, so when you look at it you're like, that's really good, and this world you built's really good. And I think that's pushed more because with the gunpla you can just pose it differently and it's telling a whole entire different story than it was with your original pose or photo that you submitted. So the diorama aspect is kind of pushed to the wayside. It's kind of like a secondary thing. They don't even judge it.
That could be my failing to grasp, as I've kind of drifted between the two. You know, that's one of the things that I think is most disappointing in Gunpla Land, is that there are diorama builders and most of them are frankly excellent. And
they're insane.
I've seen some killer diorama builds, but they almost get treated like a secondary act when everything about what they make is technically, skill wise, compositionally, lighting superior to 90% of the builds I see. And
that's kind of a thing. Judging. It's a deficiency. I consider. I think that not judging a diorama is a deficiency in judging.
It's terrible. Yeah, I mean, that's a thing where, I've had to explain to IPMS judges where they look at Star Wars and mecha stuff and they're sitting there hyper focused on the model. I said, no. I was like, look. This is something where the model is matching the quality of the diorama. You need to judge the whole entire piece subjectively. I mean, you can have the Mona Lisa, but if it's in a Walmart $5 frame, it's going to look like shit.
See, that's a good analogy on there.
Yeah. And that's where we, with the Hangar 18 contest, we don't have, I mean, there's a snap build category because we have a lot of new people and they're not going to enter in this main contest, but we don't have any other tiers. It's first, second, third, do whatever the fuck you want and use whatever the fuck you want. But if you're going to build a diorama, it needs to make the same quality as your kit. I don't care how good your kit is.
Oh, yeah.
If it's on a shitty diorama, I'm not even going to fucking look at it. I mean, I'm going to look at it, but that's how most people are going to view it, is they're going to be like, oh man, this thing's fucking cool. But why do you have plaster thrown everywhere on for sand? It doesn't make any sense. But I think that's another thing to where there's not a lot of overlap where it comes to some of the quality control between miniatures and just base scale modeling. Yeah,
there's
miniatures. You have to make the world sell the miniature and scale modeling. You got to make the scale model sell the world.
And the question is
that's a great break.
Is that even an overlap that should happen? It's an overlap want to see happen because it's two things that I really do care about. And it's two things that I would to see grow and benefit from the world each other inhabit. But it's like, is it even really applicable? You know, it's like I've been banging my head against this for a few years now and either nobody's listening or like whatever. I get really goddamn frustrated when I'm like, the thing is, none of you are good at this.
None of them are good at what? I mean, are you talking about which part?
Sorry, that's just me going into my general freak out mode. The disparity between what constitutes skilled between the two and the fact that you're practically speaking different languages, you know, like there's probably not a day that goes by on the GBA that one of my friends doesn't make fun of me for being like, feels good to come along and tell people to highlight something, you know, like it's like it's like the most ridiculous thing they've ever heard, you know? And I'm just like, on one hand, fuck you. And on the other hand, what?
We do highlight, right? Like, that's the thing, though. It is a highlighting in Gunpla is a very different technique, but the composition is the same. Effectively, when you highlight in Gunpla, maybe you highlight by shading, you know? And the reason why I say that is because that doesn't make any sense to any miniature painter. Like a miniature painter wouldn't understand that whole concept. You highlight by shading because no, miniature painters shade and highlight. You must do both.
Not necessarily.
That's how achieve.
There's additive and subtractive color palettes and lighting models and all that stuff. Like it's all got analogs. It's just
I don't think this one does though. I would say that highlighting is necessary for miniature painting, and the reason why is because of the size of the piece.
Yeah,
you know, in both hobbies intend to simulate something small. It would basically simulate the look of something big in something small. You know,
whether you're increasing shadow or exaggerating light. I mean, ideally, at least by current zeitgeist standards or whatever, ideally you're doing both. But
that's what I mean.
Like, that's the whole the glaze over white method, the contrast method that's getting pushed around now that Joel is actually doing a great job with. It's an additive painting method, but it's a subtractive lighting and shading method.
And in Gunpla,
you're just taking away from the bright as you paint.
Pre-shading is that too, though. You know, with pre-shading, you're effectively doing the same thing that you would do to start doing contrast painting, but you're doing it on a much larger scale. So, and you're usually using an airbrush to do so.
Kind of
for application.
The difference is that when you're pre-shading, and I love pre-shading. I'm not disparaging anything here. When you're pre-shading, you're setting down your bases, and then you intend to build back up. Ideally, with glaze painting or glaze over white or contrast method or whatever, you're starting with your absolute brightest brights, and you don't come back to them. Like, you're constantly pushing shadows down and defining the difference between light and dark. There is no default highlighting after that.
I use glazes differently than you do, Phil. Interesting.
I use glazes.
I think
both ways.
And I think this is where the default we could definitely
that yeah, technique yeah. works that way. What you do with but, it is up to you.
Yeah.
Where is that default method
interesting
origin from? Games Workshop, or is that just as a thing where it was taught?
I think the origin is oil painting. I think the origin is the Renaissance. Like, if you go far enough back, you can see what people were doing during the Renaissance whenever they made basically like. Spanish Renaissance painters had this stark contrast between light and dark. And when they developed that contrast, they had to develop a way to make their figures in the foreground make sense with their dark backgrounds.
What they were doing actually made more, it was more of an analog to pre-shading. They were literally pre-shading. They would paint the entire painting in sepia tones or whatever, and then glaze over with oils.
Yeah, they glaze over it. There's
but that was more like pre-shading as opposed to the glaze down method. Like,
yeah,
you can use glazes lots of different ways, but that actual
there's
technique.
There's a lot of different views on how, in a sense, different, both from a scale modeling perspective to a miniature perspective of how these different techniques and how we kind of view each other, but there's the biggest thing is also how the public views this kind of stuff. But real quick, we're going to get into, what do we call the money zone and the premonition?
Oh, fuck. Is it the money zone? No, it was the
Great Hall of Feasting.
That was what
you
it was.
My cheeseburgers. Yeah, yeah.
Cheeseburgers. So here's the thing. I don't like to paint at home. I don't know why. Like, we had a episode of The Cutting Mat whenever Tino talked about doing drawing at Starbucks. And I feel like if I could carry like all my paints and brushes and stuff with me to the hobby store, for example, I think it'd be super fun, you know?
Hey, bud, guess what? I got something for you.
Is it called a cardboard? Product. You're going to sell me a cardboard box? Is that what you're going to sell me, Joel? God.
No, this is the quite the opposite of a cardboard box. So welcome to the Great Hall of Feasting, as we call it, talk about our sponsors so we can buy more cheeseburgers. The first and new one that we have here is from Mini Masterworks. They have a Kickstarter out that ends from the time of recording. I believe, let's see here, July 28th is when it ends, and it's already funded, which is fucking amazing.
It's fantastic.
At the time of recording, they're at 101K in terms of funding, and their funding goal was 85K, but this is their new Studio X mobile miniature painting studio. If you head to our website, thecuttingmatpodcast.com, we'll have a whole little area there where you can check it out. This is, and I'm a slut for storage, as I like to tell my girlfriend. This thing is my fucking wet dream for workshops because it is a literal. I mean, it is a literal mobile painting studio. You can.
It's like the size of a big Folgers can. You remember the old Folgers coffee
cans?
No,
not at all. It is. It's taller than that. It could fit
inside one. Like, it's amazing.
No, it could. The Folger can fit inside this.
Oh, interesting.
It's much bigger than that. Yeah, it's actually 13 by 25 inches tall, and has a footprint of about 8 inches by 7 inches. And what it has, and what you get with it, is a brush hanger and a wall mount. So it actually kind of solves a problem that we see with a lot with hand brushes, where people leave them in the cups, or they'll leave them standing up vertically in a paint cup or some shit, and they're the fucking the water and then paint pigments get down into the bristles and it fucks them up. This one actually hangs your brushes upside down, which is fucking rad. It comes with two wet palettes, which is very handy, and they're very small. The fucking thing I hate about goddamn, here's my fucking rant about wet palettes that I've learned. They're fucking massive for no goddamn reason.
Well, they just use itself. Whatever Tupperware container you can find, right?
Yeah, this when, one when they're you, very they're portable and they're mobile and they're small, which is fucking great. And you get two of them.
And when you store them, they're upright. That's very important. That means that they actually function as wet palettes while you're transporting them. They're actually stored in the correct orientation inside this thing. Which is great.
Correct. Yeah. And then you also get, I mean, this thing comes with fucking everything, but you're able to hold all kinds of paints, your tools, runners. If you want to build some minis, you can take a whole entire project from start to finish and do it with this. And for those that teach a lot of workshops, this is great because you can bring all your supplies in one convenient carrying little case. Or if you know, if you're like us at Hangar 18, we have a lot of build meets. And say you want to go paint miniatures or even work on your Gundam stuff and your hand painter. This is fucking perfect. Check them out at Kickstarter. Again, the company is Mini Masterworks, and this is the Studio X Mobile Miniature Painting Studio. You do not want to miss this Kickstarter. They are unlocking all kinds of crazy add-ons and extra free shit. And there's a lot of great companies that are, you know, teamed up with them. There's ones with Badger got on board with them. They offer a lot of really cheap primers. I mean, like really cheap. Monument Hobbies got involved. Game Envy, that actually makes the hobby holder that I fucking love. They're involved as well. It's really just a great company. The guy that's running this is he's a wonderful fucking team, and he's a great dude. So definitely go check that out. And other sponsors we have, of course, is SMS Paint, Scale Modeling Supply. Check them out at our other sponsor for this episode is USAGundamStore.com. If you're in the States, that's where you can buy their supplies. And SMS has a lot of great hand painting stuff now. They have a lot of great brushes.
They do.
And just a lot more tools and cutting mats and great stuff. And it's a locally owned business in Australia. Scott's madman. He does all this shit by himself and he's absolutely fucking killing everything that he does. USA Gundam Store, make sure you head over there. If you're, you know, super big into Gundam stuff, you want to explore that world of scale modeling, go try it out. And of course, Holy Mounting Printing. If you like miniature, I feel like most people that like miniatures really fuck with metal. So if you're into that, go check that out. And then also check out the,
there is,
yeah, there's a little bit of an overlap there. There was a thing with Bolt Thrower and a lawyer and all this other shit, but, I got a store in there called True Gumpla. So if you like death metal themed mecha stuff, go check that out. And then I'm trying to play around with the idea of maybe, you know, some non-copywritten orc and other, you know, fantasy wargaming shirts. But again, if you want to become a sponsor or if you just want to support the podcast, check us out on Patreon. It's underneath the Cutting Mat Podcast. We have tiers that start at $2. And even the $2 tiers, you get something mailed to you every month. And it's usually two stickers and a bunch of other goodies. And to all the Patreon supporters that have already been helping us out and supporting, thank you so much. There is a new shirt coming out very soon, so make sure you head over to the Patreon, and we'll have a survey for you guys to get your shirt sizes all together. But let's fucking get back to how the public views these two weird hobbies that we are all very passionate and obsessed about.
Yeah, but do we have to? Because I've really been enjoying the Great Hall of Feasting.
Yeah, but we got to get out because now I have to eat cheeseburger. And while you guys talk about miniatures and other bullshit.
Yeah, the sound quality. Yeah, I see what you mean. The sound quality is questionable. All right. Yeah, I think, you know, you go to a hobby store and, like, if you have, like, a Gunpla model in your hand and some miniatures in your hand, they're is an understanding that there's going to be like a different amount of effort required for the two. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that makes sense.
I don't even know if like a different amount, because like somebody that does something that I find to be aesthetically not challenging in any way might still be really like functionally difficult to perform. So it's not really like, I don't know. It's just it's a different thing, I guess.
I guess you're also going to use them for different things as well.
Yeah.
Like on the hobby side, those minis are probably going to be game pieces.
Yeah. And that's another important distinction to make, even between like, you know, the people that are hanging out and painting cool, like the people that paint extra good at your hobby shop, you know, that are there to like help out and show you how to do stuff, probably aren't going to be competing at Bristol Brush. I'm not, you know, I'll throw out advice all day, but I'm nowhere near that good, you know?
I have that dream, but at this point it's vacuous, right? Because I'm not like, I know for a fact that I'm not pushing myself as hard as I have to achieve that level.
Yeah.
That's another thing about skill level. If you know where you are, like, yeah, you know where you are, you're more likely to push yourself to improve to where you need to be. But sometimes knowing where you are also gives you like an idea of how much you will have to push to get to where you want to be.
Yeah.
You know,
I think there was a great Miniac video where he kind of touched on that a little bit. I think he entered in either Golden Demon or Crystal Brush or something. Ooh. to kind of test himself to see where am I at with, you know, his skill set and his level and
it's a really self-awareness healthy way to approach of how his
models looks.
Agreed.
Yeah, he also talked to a lot of the winners of previous years and said, hey, look at my model and tell me what you think.
And you can do that there. And most, I mean, I haven't met a lot of them yet, but people I know that have gone to these things have been like, I talked to X and X and X. Like, I'm just like, holy shit. Be like, they're human. You can speak to them.
Like celebrities. Right?
Their feet touch the ground.
You know. They don't actually feel. That's a common misconception.
Okay.
Once you hit that level, gravity is optional. It becomes optional.
But no, it's wild. And that's a place where, I mean, they're there. That's where they are this year.
Yeah. Right.
You they're can real. Go hang out. And they want to talk to you. Like, they would like to have more people to bash their fucking head against next year. You know, like, if you can step up to the plate, they want you at it. You know,
yeah.
There's no, like, something... you shouldn't be talking to me. You know, there's going to be more of a language barrier issue than a too cool thing.
Yeah.
And I think that's something where, and we'll get into this next episode where it's the throwdown of Gunpla versus miniature painting. But I think that's something where we don't have that really in terms of Gunpla. We have it for scale model, because here's the difference. Here's something that I also kind of want to talk about is how the public views the two hobbies. And of course, outside looking in, generic Joe Blow is going to look at a miniature and be like, okay, you fucking dork, you're painting orcs.
We're looking pretty much the same.
they both look like nerd hobbies, but when I tell people that I work a lot in the scale modeling world, they assume movie world. They assume ILM.
Oh, sure.
With a workshop, and I'm like, oh that's you my built military. Story, buddy.
Yeah.
but that is a very big thing, because that is the general misconception about it. Yes, what we're doing is scale modeling, but we're not making. We're not making a thing from scratch. We're not taking this thing and converting it into another thing. And sometimes we are, and that's where that line is so subjective where it comes in. But outside looking in, when you say you're a scale modeler, the first thing that people think about is ILM, Star Wars. You know, you make you know, spaceships and guns and helmets and shit.
Right. As long as it's for something that they would pay money for, then it's good.
Yeah, well, sure. That's, right. that's a whole different conversation.
Is it a thing that they would consume? Is it a thing they can assign value to? Then
how does
then
it benefit them?
Then it has value. Yeah.
Well, I think there's also like the general public understands the concept of military modeling. They've all seen like tank models and plane models. Whether or not
they understand that as well.
I don't think that gets viewed much differently than Gunpla or minis, personally. But
maybe not.
You know, they understand maybe not, that's a tank. You know?
But see, a scale Lamborghini is a scale model of a thing which exists, you know?
Yeah.
Like there's some explanation.
That is a scale model.
Yeah.
I still feel like that guy looks just as nerdy to everybody as we do. But
a lot of it is subject of the content, the actual matter of what you're building.
It's definitely
see a dude.
A Lambo is more relatable than an orc. I'll definitely give you that. But it's still dudes painting toys. That's what it is, you know? Like
And I I've actually got an interesting kind of different opinion on this. I consider Gunpla to be scale modeling, but I don't consider miniature painting to be scale modeling. Fight me.
Oh, I mean, actually, yeah.
That's objectively false. I don't know what to tell you.
it's different,
very specific scales.
I mean, the term of the industry and the hobby is scale modeling, but I don't, it's not, neither one of them are actual scale modeling. The dude building buildings that are going to get blown up by a giant monster in Japan, that is scale modeling.
Right.
Okay. The guy building the kaiju concept car model, that is scale modeling. But,
yep. And why but again, is that like, as opposed to somebody that scratch builds an entire,
because
you know,
you're
scale
you're
accurate diorama
handed,
for other stuff?
Well, that's, I mean, again, but that's diorama making. That's the same as making a diorama for a movie. But when you're handed a product that has instructions, you are no longer scale modeling. You are building a Lego set, a construction set.
I see
it's what you do after it. But again,
actually, this is really
like everything,
interesting because
it's all subjective.
It is subjective. And it's what's really interesting is that you took issue with the term modeling. Because you're thinking, well, you're just putting together a kit, you're not actually modeling. And I think
that's a bias that exists, but
yeah, but see, my issue is with the term scale.
Yeah,
because scale has a very specific,
because this is an imaginary thing.
It's all imaginary. But
that's
the thing is
where the weird thing happens. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's imaginary.
Yeah, that it is.
But I mean, there are guys imaginary, that meld that too. Like you look at James in Australia, Nozaku boy, like he'll literally sit down and like get documents from his local planning commission and like do like zoning accurate road stripes and you know scale that's accurate scale air conditioning units
and see
I mean, oh yeah,
that's the most insanely tedious level of detail that I could personally imagine. But
that's
nails it, and it's perfect, and it looks like it's supposed to when he's finished, and that's cool. So there is
that. And that's something where, again, the definition of scale modeling gets blurred, because I've talked to ILM dudes, and they're like, building a Gunpla is not scale modeling. Doing what he is doing of finding out the zoning records and how tall a building is to XYZ. Yeah.
Maybe there's
and
a flight type Zaku zipping around it, but that's
you map it down. Yep.
But that's 10th and Main.
Then you have
Brisbane, you know.
It's actually 10th and Main. Down to the mailboxes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's and again, that's where, again, you know, public looking into it. I mean, the dude working ILM is part of the public looking at it is what we do, what the skill level is, how you define the skill, what is a top tier, what is the top tier contest, who's the best of the best. At the end of the day, there is no law, there's no authority in hobby. It is all subjective to a group council in a sense, and then also to individuals' perspective. Of we just found out is that even the three of us, our technical two-heart definitions of what scale modeling means to us is vastly different from all three of our opinions.
Yeah. And I think that's very important to keep in mind.
You said group council, and I call that, I used this term earlier in the podcast. Let's see if, how many listeners remember this. I call that the meta.
Test.
That's the meta.
Yeah,
that's
the meta.
The group council just means, well, what does your like local group do? Like there's your meta.
And at first I
think about it.
I hated it that you used that term originally.
I know.
I recoiled from it hard. But
I could even see it. I can't even see your face, but I can see it through
the
sound.
Halfway across
the sound waves on the screen. I can see it.
The thing that actually did resonate with me after I cooked on it for a minute is that a meta changes.
Yeah.
It shifts.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And
it's never static.
And that is that's a thing that I find both exciting about Gunpla versus minis, and it's a thing that is really frustrating to me.
Meta only means expectations, you know.
Well, and when you have a small population of people, like, you know, if I want to look up a mini painting technique, I hop on YouTube and there's 700 billion tutorials from 700 billion meta people all over the planet. I have to put on language filters, you know, like it's a thing. You look for Gunpla help and there's like maybe 10 people that speak your language and they de facto dictate what is good, which is really weird for me. And I think dangerous and difficult and a real hamper to growth.
I think we'll, let's do this. This episode is getting super long.
I'm sorry.
And I think that we can cover this in another episode. We'll end on this thought that in both miniature painting and Gunpla, there are certain pressures put on modelers by their quote-unquote audience. And that basically establishes a meta or a series of expectations that they are judged by. Whether that's a good or bad thing, we could probably argue about that.
And whether it evolves or just shifts.
It's yeah.
Debatable. But
yeah, that's a big thing too.
I think we're really getting into the core of this. This is really good.
This is going to be a thing, man. You plan for two episodes? This might be fucking three.
That's not even joking. 12 episodes and a movie. The movie is going to be real.
I can't wait.
I've already... Crispin Glover is going to be in it.
Well, Action Bronson's going to play me. He's going to be getting some weight.
Drew Barrymore is going to play me.
If we're going to pull back on that one, then I want to say for the record that the nature of this conversation is that we're comparing and contrasting, and every one of us and anyone that has this discussion is going to have different biases and different directions or whatever. But I'm pretty sure I can speak for everybody when I say that this is three people that absolutely love both worlds and want to see each embrace goodness from the other to grow and get better. But, that needs to be kept in mind anytime we're talking about, you know, the differences that we may or may not like. It's not a statement on the whole. It's a statement on conditions.
That's our whole thing. You know, we love
our voices are so not authorities,
right? No, we're not authorities.
Hell no.
We're just nerds. We're just nerds that love a thing.
Absolutely.
And if you disagree with us or if you agree with us, this is going to be, posted.
Both are good.
This is going to be on both our Instagram and our Facebook for the Cutting Mat Podcast. Please send us a comment or, you know, you can send us an email if you'd like. Join our Patreon.
Yeah. Join the Discord.
If you join our Patreon at patreon.com/thecuttingmatpodcast, you will automatically be sent an invitation to our Discord and be able to discuss with everyone, all of our fans, in real time. And I'm sure that this episode will come up as a major discussion topic because people love this as much as we do. And I know that you guys have opinions.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's good. Something that we're very, we're all of us, not just the three of us, but and Tino and Bailey included. And I would say our whole entire community, we're very passionate about it. And what we're saying again is not law. It's not, you know, the Cutting Mat said this. It is our subjective opinions. But like Brandon said, if you want to come hang out with us, come join the Discord. And we actually have an episode discussion channel where we talk about this stuff because we don't want a listener or anyone out there to listen to this and be like, well, fuck these guys. They have no idea what they're talking about because they think XYZ. We want to hear why do you think, you know, Brandon's opinion's wrong or my opinion's wrong. We want to have these healthy discussions because it's only going to lead to self-reflection and involvement and evolution in the hobby to just greater and bigger things when we come together and have these discussions for sure. So
one of the reasons I really like talking with this group of people is that we come from just distinct enough of backgrounds and involvement in both of those worlds that there's a pretty good flow of different perspectives on any given topic. And if there's any, you know, if there's something that somebody really gives a shit about that we're missing, then I want to get it injected into the conversation.
Yeah.
So
yeah, dude,
let us know so that we can talk about it.
For real. If you join our Patreon and join our Discord and you know, go on our discussion channel and say, I disagree with, you know, Brandon, mecha genre about X, I promise that I will respond to you. And it might be friendly. And with that, we've got to wrap this up, guys. I've got a cult meeting in 10 minutes, and I'm supposed to level up tonight.
Oh, shit.
The next skill level, check this out. I'm supposed to learn how to read cats' minds. That's what it says.
Cats' minds?
How far away is that from Magic Meowth?
Magic Meowth? Well, it's honestly Magic Meowth adjacent is actually what the level is called.
Fantastic.
Level one was called Weedle.
That is the only attempt at a Pokemon joke I've ever made.
Magic Meowth. It's like Magic Mouth, but, you know, you summon a Meowth, which is affixed to a surface. Oh, God. Magic Mouth is not good for sex games in Dungeons & Dragons.